නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සම්මාදිට්ඨි ආනන්ද භාවිතා බහුලී කතා රාග විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති දෝෂ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති තී. Dear Dhamma friends, as you all know, we are discussing Brahmana Sutta, which is available in Magga Sanyutta, in Sanyutta Nikaya, that is the collected discourses of the Buddha. And particularly we are using this sutta to discuss about Noble Eightfold Path. So in this sutta, Buddha mentioned that the Noble Eightfold Path can be considered as a divine vehicle, as a Dhamma vehicle, and as a vehicle which is used for noble conquer or noble quest, kind of a complete kind of a battle vehicle, armored car, which can be used in the battle of this Kilesa. Now, just to recall about the incident, what has happened, there is one Brahmin called Janussoni. He actually is a fairly wealthy Brahmin, and one day he is going through Shravasti, and he is using everything in white color. So his clothing white, and his chariot also white, mean that the horses used in the chariot are also white, and the canopy also white, upholstering also white, and even the reins used are also white. Even the stick used to control these horses are also white. So likewise, everything is in white color. So people have noticed this, and they actually exclaimed, and they mentioned, this is a kind of a divine vehicle. This is really a Brahma vehicle, and it is really interesting or wonderful. So likewise, the people are talking about this particular vehicle. So this was noticed by Venerable Ananda, who was in the Pindapatha to Shravasti, and he too has noticed this incident. And after coming back to Jetavanarama, he mentioned this to the Buddha. And he requested, is it possible to give a kind of an analogy to this vehicle to in terms of the Dhamma? So then Buddha mentioned, yes, it is possible. And there Buddha mentioned, ඉමස්සේවකෝ ඒතං ආනන්ද අරියස්ස අට්ඨංගිකස්ස මග්ගස්ස අදිවචනම් බ්‍රහ්මයානං ඉතිපි ධම්මයානං ඉතිපි අනුත්තරෝ සංගාම විජයෝ ඉතිපි. So basically, this divine vehicle, Brahma vehicle, is a synonym for Noble Eightfold Path. So that is the Dhamma vehicle. This is the divine vehicle, and this is the vehicle which is bringing us victory in the kind of battle in the samsara. Now, there Buddha talks about Noble Eightfold Path, namely Samma Ditti, the right view, Samma Sankappa, right intentions, Samma Vacha, that is the right words, Samma Kammanta, right actions, Samma Ajiva, right livelihood, Samma Sati, that is the Samma Vayama, that is the right effort, Samma Sati, right mindfulness, Samma Samadhi, right concentration. So these are the Noble Eightfold factors. And so we first taken the part, that is the Sammaditti. So Sammaditti is twofold, and that is well explained in Mahachattarisaka Sutta. It's available in Majjhima Nikaya. So there Buddha mentioned there are two kinds of Sammaditti. Attibhikkave sammaditti sasava punya bhagya upadi vepakka. There is one kind of sammaditti, right view, which is with taints, and it is pertaining of merit and ripening in the acquisitions. So basically the idea is, one is establish oneself in the this sort of sammaditti, mundane kind of sammaditti, and it is actually ripening in the good acquisitions. So if you did a good thing, and you can sort of reap the good results. And say, for example, if you give a dana, become somewhat generous, then as a result of that, probably you in this very life or in a future life, you will be getting a lot of other, say, acquisitions, various resources, and good, say, wealth, and etc. So as a result, so this kind of a samadhi is capable of bringing us this upadhi, various acquisitions, various assets. Now, on the other hand, it is also in the wholesome side, but it is somewhat rooted in asava, somewhat rooted in the kilesa, because there is still a self-view. Somewhat rooted in the ignorance, because there is avijja, ignorance, and kind of a self-view is there. But anyway, the first of all, we need to become a good person. So while being an extremely bad person, immoral behavior, with immoral behavior, one can't say that I am with samadhitti. So first of all, therefore, one has to establish oneself in the samadhitti. So that is the mundane kind of samadhitti. One has to become a good person. As much as possible, one has to try to do that. This doesn't mean that one have to be immediately be perfect in order to go to the next stage. You can actually start both. But as much as possible, one has to try his best to become a good person. So in the first category, actually the emphasis is given for karma. So there are several types of parts that we have discussed in this, emphasizing on generosity, emphasizing karma, emphasizing rebirth, and again emphasizing gratitude, and again the some idea about celestial realms, and again giving at the end kind of a hope, kind of a direction towards the supramundane type of samadhitti. So therefore, this whole first category, much emphasis is given on the karma. So one has to believe in karma, one has to accept karma, and one has to understand that one's inheritance is in a way karma. Actually, one's refuge is also the karma. So karma here means volitional action. So if one volitionally do something using the body or words, speech or the mind, there could be a potential developed which can give results in the future. Now, having said that, so we have moved to a second part, that is the supramundane type of samadhitti. Katamacha bhikkave samadhitti ariya anasava lokuttara magganga. Monks, what is this right view which is noble, taintless, supramundane, and again a factor of the path? Now here we can see definitely it is in the wholesome side, and again there are some salient features here. One thing is it is supramundane, and again it is a path factor, and again it is taintless and it is noble. So therefore one has to understand what is this kind of samadhitti. So this is the area that we need to develop as practitioners. So here the explanation is given with respect to a practitioner. So you can see from even the definition that Buddha expected to have a kind of a growing kind of samadhitti. It is not something that we learn today and we say that I am now with samadhitti and then forget it. It is not like that. Rather, Buddha give a kind of a definition which is some sort of a evolving nature. Yako bhikkave arya cittasa anasava cittasa arya magga samangino arya maggam bhavayato. Now here he talks about a practitioner, his follower, and in his mind, that means in this practitioner's mind, there is a quality being developed which is anasava, which is taintless. And this person is now practicing according to the dhamma, according to the magga, according to the path. And he is fairly trying to establish in the path. And this quality is an evolving quality. It starts with panya, the wisdom, panyindriyam, that is the faculty of wisdom, and then panya balang, the power of wisdom, and then dhamma vichaya sambojjango, that is the awakening factor of investigation of various phenomena, and then sammaditti magganga. So that is the right view available in the Noble Eightfold Path. Now here we can see kind of a gradual improvement of the wisdom, the faculty of wisdom. So this is an area that we need to understand. So it is not that immediately one become full-fledged in the sammaditti. Rather, sammaditti has to be developed from kind of a ground level, we can say. To some extent, we may have some understanding. And again, once we establish ourselves in the mundane type of sammaditti, we have some understanding, but that is not enough. And one has to get on to the practice and try to develop the wisdom faculty, try to develop the quality of the wisdom. So there we can say, for example, in the Satipatthana Sutta, if one is practicing Anapanasati, say you are being mindful on the in-breath, being mindful on the out-breath, and when you are being mindful on the in-breath, say you are able to establish mindfulness. For many hundreds breaths, you can be mindful. But Buddha doesn't stop there. He asks us to inquire this breath. He asks us to examine this breath. He asks us to closely investigate this breath. Say, for example, whether this breath is long, whether this breath is short, whether it is warm, whether it is cool, where it is touching, from which nostril it is going in, from which nostril it is going out. So likewise, as much as possible, all these subtle aspects are to be examined. So this is the way that Buddha gradually brings us to the wisdom side. So here we actually call it as sampajanya, comprehension, clear comprehension. So we are trying to clearly know the object. So this is not limited to anapanasati. And this is similar in many other areas. Say, for example, if you are practicing elements meditation. So various elements are there. Say, earth element, water element, air element, fire element. So as you are experiencing them on that very moment, in the present moment, so you have to inquire, you have to examine, you have to investigate. Then only the clear knowing, clear comprehension, sampajanya going to develop. Similarly, assume you are doing Vedana Anupassana, being mindful on various feelings. So they are also establishing mindfulness is the first step, and once mindfulness is well established, you need to examine, you need to investigate how these feelings are behaving and what are the qualities and how quickly are they arising, how long are they existing and how quickly are they passing away. And is it really a single feeling or are there many feelings? So likewise, so you have to examine these feelings. Suppose you do Chittanupassana. There also you are keeping well-established mindfulness and you are able to recognize various thoughts popping up in the mind. And as and when they are popping up, arising, you should be able to notice them. And you can recognize whether it is lustful thought, whether it is a angry thought, whether it is kind of a resistance or kind of a little frustration, maybe sort of a jealousy, envy, or maybe loving kindness, maybe faithful thought. So likewise, you can immediately recognize the quality of these thoughts. So this is actually related to the sampajanya, clear knowing. So it is not merely that you are trying to be aware of these thoughts, but again, you can recognize various facets of these thoughts. Now, as a result of that, you are not being driven by those thoughts, and you are able to recognize them properly, and you can let them go. And there, it may actually change to quickly arising and passing away. There you may not even be able to recognize the quality, but rather you can understand how transient they are. So likewise, even in the Chittanupassana and Dhammanupassana, so you have to encourage this kind of examination, kind of an investigation. So as you are doing like this, it is growing to the next level, that is the Panjindriyam. So that is the faculty of wisdom. So there you understand, okay, there is a quality in the mind called wisdom. Like you understood there's a quality in the mind called mindfulness. Similarly, there is a kind of quality in the mind called wisdom. Now you can properly recognize it as a separate quality. Previously, you didn't know there is such quality and you didn't know that it can be developed. But now, as a result of our practice, now wisdom is developing and now you can recognize it as a separate quality which can be developed in the mind. So that is where the level of faculty, the indriya. And one day, probably you can understand, okay, today in the morning I have good wisdom, kind of a penetrative knowledge. I could understand things very easily. But in the evening, I didn't have that much of sharp mind, sharp wisdom. I was little ignorant. So I did something unmindfully and ignorantly. So my wisdom was not that sharp during the evening. So likewise, you can sort of notice the status of your mind, state of your mind, and there you can understand whether the wisdom was present or not present, or whether it is strong or weak. Now, as we are further improving the wisdom, it can become panya bala, so that is the power of wisdom. So there you have the confidence, you know how to develop it, you know the quality of the wisdom, you know its advantages, you know all the techniques to develop wisdom. So you are fairly having good confidence about wisdom. Even when the mind become ignorant, now you are not shaken, because you know how to regain wisdom, how to re-establish wisdom. So this is called panya bala. And then once it comes to the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga, so there actually now your whole practice is well directed towards the realization of Nibbana. Now you are not using the, say, wisdom to various other, say, mundane kind of activities. So you give more emphasis onto the attainment of the Nibbana. Now, well directed. So you are now focused on awakening. And there are two levels we can understand. So you are purposely, deliberately developing wisdom. And on the other hand, you allow the wisdom to grow naturally. So that can be considered as a second phase of the development of Bojjhanga. So which I actually explained in the Satipatthana Sutta, where first we establish mindfulness and start to investigate various phenomena. So that is the beginning of the Dhamma Vichaya Sambojjhanga. But later, as we develop to some extent, so now we have to allow the process to happen. So the process itself has catching momentum and it has now built, and now we have to allow things to happen naturally rather than me putting our hand, and now the process is developing. It has gained its own momentum, and there we have to allow things to happen smoothly, and we have to adjust ourselves, we have to accept the way it is, and so the kind of mindset has to be changed. So when it comes to Dhammaditti Magganga, now we are further examining, sort of trying to understand, so what are the other qualities that we need to thought or to develop in this Sammaditti Magganga, the path factor of the right view. Now, in order to further explain that, actually we discuss about Micchaditti Sutta, where how this wrong view can be developed in a mind. So there Buddha very clearly mentioned, if one attached to five aggregates, so that can lead to develop Micchaditti. It doesn't mean that immediately once you attach to some sort of an aggregate that you become a Micchadittika, one with the wrong view. Rather, if you continuously grasp any sort of aggregate again and again, and you do it for a long time, then there's a higher possibility that one can even become sort of having a wrong view. Now, we have discussed further about the perversions, how we wrongly understand what is impermanent as permanent, what is unsatisfactory as satisfactory, and what is non-self as a self, and what is loathsome as beautiful. Now these are in a way the perversions that we continuously going through, and as a result of that, our recognition, how we understand or how we recognize various things as we experience them, is in a way perverted, is in a way wrong. Something went wrong. We didn't really properly understood it at the very beginning. Since we understood or since we recognize it in a wrong way, so as we think about it again and again, so that wrong understanding or wrong recognition become somewhat ingrained in our mind. Now the mind is somewhat conditioned to think in that wrong way. Now if we think like that for long, long time, so many years, we think in the same manner, so that wrong understanding, that misunderstanding become well established in the mind, ingrained in the mind, now it is very difficult to change. Now there we become sort of a michchadittika, one with the wrong view. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, if we are able to avoid this clinging, avoid this grasping, upadana, then there is no possibility of arising michchaditti, of arising wrong view. So that is the, say, logic behind in this sutta, where Buddha talks about the michchaditti, how a michchaditti going to arise. Now there we can understand one important feature, that is, if one is, say, rupang upadaya, rupang abhinivissa, michchaditti uppajjati. Similarly, vedanang upadaya, vedana abhinivissa, michchaditti uppajjati. Sanya upadaya, sanyang abhinivissa, michchaditti uppajjati. Sankhare upadaya, sankhare abhinivissa, michchaditti uppajjati. Vinyanang upadaya, vinyanang abhinivissa, michchaditti uppajjati. So, the wrong view may arise by clinging either to the form, either to the feelings, either to the perceptions, either to the formations or to the consciousness. Now, if we are able to build a mind, if we are able to develop a mind which is not grasping any of these aggregates, then there is no possibility of arising michchaditti. Now, using that strategy, now Buddha more and more giving us various ways and means how to avoid this kind of a clinging. So clinging actually leads to develop michchaditti. Now how are we going to avoid clinging? In other terms, if we are able to avoid clinging, then we can say we have a fair amount of sammaditti. We have proper wisdom. So non-clinging is based on sammaditti. Now, in order to further explain this, I today like to take another sutta, which is called Kacchanagotta Sutta. This is a very profound sutta and really interesting, and directly give a much advanced answer to the supramundane type of sammaditti. Now, here, one venerable called Kacchana visit the Buddha, approach the Buddha and ask a question. Directly he asked the question, Sammaditti sammaditti iti bhante vuchyati, kittavatanuko bhante sammaditti hoti iti. Venerable sir, it is said right view. In what way, venerable sir, is there right view? So basically you can see the question is asked very directly. So he directly asks what is sammaditti. Now the answer Buddha gives has good understanding or some important features that we have to recognize, we have to understand, we have to discuss. So one aspect Buddha mentioned here is how the typical worldlings are thinking, how our way of thinking. Dvenisitam ko ayam kacchana loko ye buhiyena atithancheva natithancha. So this is one statement that Buddha makes. This world kacchana, for the most part, depends upon a duality, upon the notion of existence and the notion of non-existence. Now, this duality, here mentioned in the existence and non-existence. Now, this duality, actually, we can see in many, many areas. Say, whenever you are dealing with a person, you can say that person is a good person. Or you can say he is a bad person. You can say he is a tall person. Or he is a short person. He is a young person. Or he is an old person. Say, he is a white person. Or he is a black person. Assume that you are talking about certain material. So, it's a good material. It's a bad material. It's a good food. It's a delicious food. It's a not a delicious food. It's a long path. It's a short path. So likewise, we always have this sort of a duality in our way of thinking. So we always in the kind of on-off kind of a mentality. Either correct or incorrect. On or off. Good or bad. So every time the pattern of thinking, either in the one side or in the other side. So Buddha mentioned here, most of the time, therefore, the way of thinking is based upon this duality, upon the notion of existence or upon the notion of non-existence. And on the other hand, there's another quality that the way that people are thinking and their minds are working in a way. So what is that? There Buddha mentioned, Upaya upadana abhinivesa vinibandho ko ayam kacchana loko ebhina. So this is another observation that Buddha made, that the typically worldly beings are having this kind of a characteristics. What is that? This world kacchana is for the most part shackled by engagement, clinging and adherence. Now this part actually we have to further explain. So it is not only these three parts, but Buddha explained this into five categories in the latter part of the sutta. Upaya upadana chetaso adhithana abhinivesa anusaya. So these are the five areas that Buddha mentioned here. So these are very interesting to understand, and in order to actually understand ourselves, so we need to look into our mind, how these ways of clinging are operating in our mind. Upaya. Upaya means that you are going closer to it. Say for example, say you are closer to a tree. Say you are far from a tree. Now you are going closer to the tree. Say that tree is beautiful, or that the shading of the tree is fairly necessary. So you approach the tree. You go and become closer to the tree. So this upaya is having that meaning. So that indicates that whenever your mind getting closer to something, attached to something, coming closer to something, so that the Pali term used is upaya. So then upadana means that now once you come closer, you get hold of it. You clung to it. So you are clinging to it. You are grasping it. Now this is in a way some improved state of that upaya. Upadana is much greater clinging, and that you are holding it. So mentally you are holding it. And chetaso adhithana. Now you are taking a kind of mental standpoint, and you have your view. I have my opinion. So this is my standpoint. So this is what I represent. So this is my view. So likewise, we talk. In our language, we use those terms just to say, so this is my view. This is what I represent. This is my opinion. So there we firmly establish ourselves onto some sort of a mental standpoint. So there also we are holding something. It may be kind of dogmatic, belief, maybe some sort of philosophical idea, or maybe some sort of traditional idea, or maybe some custom that we taken from our culture. So whatever it is, that we are strongly holding some sort of an idea. So that is the mental standpoint. And then abhinivesa, and you are in that, you have adhered to that, you are sort of, you have gone into it. So you are with it now, basically. You have gone inside that sort of the mental adherence. So there it is called abhinivesa. So you have gone into it, now you are living in it. So you are dwelling in it. So this is the adherence. So this is the abhinivesa. Then anusaya. Now the anusaya means, now when you are doing this sort of an association, either you are coming closer, you are holding it, you are having kind of a mental standpoint about it, or you are sort of in it totally. So now you are more and more associating something. When you are associating this kind of a thing, some sort of phenomena, some sort of a view, some sort of an object, now certain qualities are being sort of transferred to the mind. Now the mind, even without that object, gain those characteristics. Now mind has its certain qualities, those are actually projected from that previous association. Now mind has become colored, mind has become conditioned. Now it has become a tendency in the mind. Now it has become a habitual tendency in the mind, because habitually for a long time, so mind has associated some sort of a quality, some sort of a person, some sort of a, say, tradition, some sort of a culture, some sort of a dogmatic belief, some sort of a phenomena. So whatever it is, so when you are associating something for a long time, it becomes kind of an inherent quality of our mind. So this is extremely sort of dangerous, because even though now the mind is not directly associating that particular quality, it is already there in the mind. Now it has become kind of a quality of our mind. So how to uproot those? So those are the actually difficult part that we have to deal with in the vipassana. So that is called anusaya. It has become a kind of a latent tendency in our mind. It is latent. You can't even recognize it immediately. But when the conditions are there, those latent tendencies become activated, and accordingly we take an action. We don't know how we took that decision, we don't know how we acted at that time, but once deeply analyzed, we can understand, okay, our mind is fairly conditioned, it being colored because of those long time association with someone or with something or with a different culture or etc. So as a result of that, our mind being conditioned. Now, all these are Buddha mentioned in this sutta, how one's mind being sort of colored, how one's mind being conditioned, how one's mind being associating something, one become clinging to something, clung to something, or one become getting closer to something. So when you have any of these, we can't say the mind is completely free. We can have to some extent freedom with less clinging, with less grasping, with less conditioning, with less standpoint. So we can actually improve like that. But till one become an arahant in a way, we can't say the mind is completely liberated, completely free. Till one become an arahant, there is some sort of a coloring, some sort of a conditioning available in the mind. So this is where we need to understand this samadhitti in a very profound manner, where we have some task to do. We have to improve our wisdom to recognize all these kind of conditioning. We need to understand the mind very, clearly, in more precise manner, in order to understand this conditioning. Now in this sutta, then Buddha talks about how to take our mind free from those two duality, either in the existence or in the non-existence, either good or bad, either long or short. So that kind of a dualistic kind of thinking has to be avoided, has to be removed from our mind. And how to do that? So there Buddha preach or give the idea of vipassana. So this is actually available in the Satipatthana and actually mentioned in this Kacchanagotta Sutta as well. So the point here, if one is able to understand the arising nature of something, then you may be able to free from the notion of non-existence. If you are able to notice the nature of passing away, you are able to free from the notion of existence. The notion of existence and the notion of non-existence are the duality. Now, in order to be free from this duality, so we need to understand the arising nature and the passing away nature. So this is what actually we do in the Udayabhyanupassana, the seeing the arising side as well as the passing side. This is well explained in the Satipatthana Sutta again and again. Say, for example, you are observing various element characteristics. You are able to recognize earth element, you are able to recognize air element, you are able to recognize heat element and the water element. So different characteristics are there. Now suppose you are able to recognize all these characteristics. Again and again, now you are able to recognize these characteristics. More you do that, so you may not only recognize these characteristics, but also you will understand their behavior, how they start, how they evolve, and how they pass away. How, say for example, heat arise, and how it may grow, and how ultimately it may fade away. How hardness arise, and then exist for a moment, and then pass away. How softness arise, and exist for a moment, and then pass away. How, say, some kind of movement arise, or starts, and then going to stop, pass away. So likewise, all the element characteristics have this arising and passing away nature. So when it is in one quality, when it is going to change to another quality, so those that previous quality is already gone. It has passed away. It has disappeared. It has vanished. Now a new quality has arisen. So when another quality is going to arising, so that previous quality also has gone. Now a new quality has come into being. So likewise, you can understand all these element characteristics have the nature to come or have the nature to arise. And they also have the nature to pass away, to disappear. Now, if you are able to recognize this arising and passing away nature of elements, so there we can say, so you are recognizing the common characteristics of all the elements. Now suppose you are doing Vedanupassana. So various feelings are there. So various feelings are coming to be. They are arising. Say painful feeling, it is arising. And it exists for a while and then it passes away. Now if you are closely looking at those painful feelings, you probably may understand. So it is not a single painful feeling, rather it's a accumulation, it's a collection of series of painful feelings. There are minute painful feelings. So each minute painful feeling has a very short life. It quickly arises and quickly passes away. Now likewise, if we are able to even look into thoughts, so thoughts also have the nature to come and go, have the nature to arise and pass away. So all these various phenomena therefore have the nature to arise and pass away. Now if one is seeing the arising nature, again and again things are arising, again and again various feelings are arising. Painful feelings are arising, pleasurable feelings are arising, neutral feelings are arising, say element characteristics are arising, various thoughts are arising. So arising. So constantly things are arising. So you see the arising nature. Again and again you understand the arising nature. So when you are well aware of this arising aspect, you can't say that things does not exist, because it is quite evident that things are arising. So when you yourself know that things are arising, you can't say that there is nothing exist. So you are gradually be free from that extreme. There is nothing exist is a kind of an extreme. And when you see again and again that things are arising, so you can be free from that extreme. On the other hand, all these various phenomena quickly passes away. Now when, say, feeling is there, it quickly passes away. Maybe painful feeling quickly passes away. Maybe pleasurable feelings, minute pleasurable feelings, they pass away. And then the minute neutral feelings, they pass away. Then say hardness pass away, roughness pass away, softness pass away. Say heat pass away, cold passed away. Movement stops, that also pass away, disappear, fades away. And when it comes to thoughts, not only they arise, they also pass away. So if we are not clinging to them, if we are not driven by them, so they start to pass away, they start to fade away. So now you notice fading away. Again and again things are fading away, again and again things are disappearing, again and again things are passing away. So when you have a good understanding of this, then you can't take that extreme that things exist. Because you know that things quickly pass away. Therefore you can't take an extreme telling that things always exist. Now your mind be free from that extreme. So likewise in this sutta, Buddha very clearly mentioned in this Kacchanagatta Sutta, for the one who sees the origin of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no notion of non-existence with regard to the world. Similarly, one who sees the cessation of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no notion of existence regarding to the world. Now you are free from the two extremes. And once you see that again and again, not only this understanding, but you are becoming not capable of holding it, because it is quickly arising and passing away. You can't hold it now. It is so fast. It happens so quickly. So now you can't cling to it. You can't hold it. It quickly changes. As a result of that, one can't take a kind of a standpoint. One can't take some sort of an opinion. One can't take any kind of a nimitta, kind of a sign. Because it is very quick, very fast, extremely transient. And if a process is extremely transient, so we can't say there is someone there, there is something there is something substantial there is some sort of a core there. Because things are extremely vulnerable, extremely transient, it quickly arising and passing away. So then we can't say on such a process there is some sort of a non-changing, everlasting kind of a quality. Everything is arising, passing away. So there you will understand it is, there is no way of having a person, a self, an individual there. Now, when he is applying that to various our own five aggregates, I am using the term own, but they are really not own. But anyway, when we using this understanding, when we using this observation to the form aggregate, to the feeling aggregate, to the perception aggregate, to the formations aggregate, to the consciousness aggregate, so there one may understand there is no core, there is no self in the form aggregate. There is no core, there is no self in the feeling aggregate. There is no core, there is no self in the formations aggregate, the perceptions aggregate, or in the consciousness aggregate. So then one can't recognize oneself in those aggregates. One can't identify oneself in those aggregates. Those aggregates are quite transient and they quickly arise and pass away. There is no self there. There is no lasting core there. And one may understand what is arising is suffering. What is passing away is suffering. And he has no perplexity about that. Again and again he understands it. Again and again he experiences it. And he understands. So whatever arises is some sort of an unsatisfaction. Whatever passing away is some sort of unsatisfaction. So whatever arising and passing away is nothing but suffering. Dukkham eva upajjamanam upajjati, dukkham nirujjamanam nirujjati. So he will understand what is arising is dukkha, what is passing away is nothing but dukkha. And na kankati na vichikichati aparappachya jnanamevas etthohoti. So about this understanding, now he has no perplexity. He has no doubt. He don't need to go and ask from someone. He himself has understood it very well. Now his understanding is quite independent from others. Now he has its own realization. Now, so this is an area that Buddha emphasized in this sutta, and then he actually talks about Patisamuppada as well. Now there he mentioned, without taking those two extremes, telling that either everything exists or telling that either everything does not exist, that Buddha has taken a middle path. So that middle path is Patisamuppada. That middle path is the dependent arising. So probably we'll take that topic on next day, because that's also a very interesting topic and further improvement of our wisdom. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions.
Dog pressing the keyboard. for any new friends that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions via the chat feature, or you may raise your hand and ask your question directly. So, Bhante, I haven't received any questions yet, but I do have two left over from last week.
Yeah.
May I go ahead?
Sure, yes.
Okay. So the first question is, Bhante, how does Panya, wisdom, improve through being able to identify different sensations of breathing?
Yeah, that is what we discuss even today. Now suppose you are practicing mindfulness on breathing. So once the mindfulness is well established, so we need to inquire the experience. We need to investigate the breath. So this investigation develops some sort of a very refined quality in the mind. So this is what we call sampajanya. Whenever a task given, whenever that we come across some situation, so we are able to look at it very carefully. We are able to investigate it with a very quiet mind. So we are able to penetrate the situation rather than simply taking the face value. So we are able to penetrate the incident, we are able to understand the situation in many different ways. Now, we are taking the breath as a kind of an example, as a kind of an exercise. So when we are developing such a quality in the mind, it is not limited to understand the breath. You can apply that same quality to everywhere. So that is why, we don't need to simply think that we are investigating breath, so how are we going to become wise? Actually, we are using breath as a kind of a pathway, as a kind of a mechanism, kind of a strategy to develop that refined quality in the mind. So once that quality is
available in the mind, it is not limited to understand the breath. You can use that, develop quality to understand anything. So that is the important thing that we need to understand. So don't think that investigation of breath is only limited to that. The skill that we gain through that will be only limited to that. Rather, it will be available for you. So there you can apply it for various other things. Even your day-to-day activities at your office, while you are traveling, while you are driving, while you are doing any other task. So that quality has become your own quality now. So mind has that capacity now. Previously, there was no such thing. You were in the always looking at the surface value. You couldn't penetrate. But now, as a result of this exercise, you have gained that quality. So as a result, so your mind become more and more wise in a way. Yeah.
The next one is more of a series of statements, but seeking Bhante's confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
So, a little bit long. It says, it says manaya, but I think this person meant mana,
uh-huh,
which makes us overestimate us. To think we are as sane as others, or there are some more people who perform well, and I'm nothing compared to them, grounds us and reduces our ego. And not to tolerate or to wait to be praised from others. As soon as someone starts praising, to know that you are into a vicious cycle, you have to change your attitude. That's the solution.
Actually, there are three types of mana, conceit Buddha mentioned. First one is Hina mana, where you sort of put you down. You think that all others are quite superior and you are no one, you are sort of quite poor, you are inferior. So that is the Hina mana. The second type is the Sadisa mana. You consider yourself equal to the others. Assume that the others are quite capable and rich and everything, some sort of thing. And you put yourself also to the same level and you consider that I am also equal to them. So that is the other category. And the other one is Adhimana, where you put yourself up more than the others. So that is the other type of conceit. Now these three types of conceit is available in ourselves and it is only be completely able to uproot when one becomes an arahant. So you can understand how deeply ingrained so this kind of a quality. Now we need to carefully recognize it. So in order to recognize it, actually one has to have a very clear mind. So you may not be able to immediately understand conceit, because when one is conceited, it's very difficult to come out of it. You become that. So you immediately understand, okay, I am this, I am that, and you become something. And you get uplifted because of that. You get motivated because of that. But in order to come out of that and recognize that even the motivation happened because of that praise, considering that you as an individual, you as a person, is in a way very challenging. As I said, it is not kind of a self-annihilation or self-denial. Rather, to understand the, say, paticca-samuppada, to understand the non-self nature, it is because of our ignorance that we consider there is a person here. So, it is not that we have to put ourselves down in order to remove conceit. So, that is maybe one approach. But more and more we need to approach using the wisdom to understand there is no individual here, there is no person here, rather it's a cause and effect relationship is going on in the mind and the body, and they are constantly rising and passing away. How can I have a person here? How can there be a core here? How can there be a everlasting soul here? So there are that we need to question, that we need to again and again recognize. And not only that, whenever conceit arising, so we should be able to recognize it. So once recognized, we have to disclaim it. We need to ignore it or simply discard it rather than encourage it. Say you are keeping yourself well aware of the mind and there are various thoughts arising in the mind. So there may be thoughts sort of promoting a self, sort of seconding a self, sort of establishing a self. Sometimes it is called as ahankara mamankara. So there are thoughts which makes a self. There are thoughts which talks about some sort of a possessing. And when we understand these thoughts, we have to discard them. Rather than promoting them, rather than encouraging them, rather than driven by them, we need to understand their futile nature. So these thoughts are trying to establish a self which is not actually there is a, when there is no self actually. It's a kind of a perversion. When there is no self, thinking that there is a self is a perversion. So these thoughts are now trying to encourage that sort of a perversion. So we need to understand that. So when there are various thoughts are arising, we are being quite aware of them. And if we little analyze them, we may understand this sort of hidden, trap in it. So once understood, we can ignore it, we can avoid it. We don't need to get trapped in it. So we can simply allow them to pass away. So if we allow them to pass away, then we are not making any kind of a conceit. So we can keep the mind fairly free, fairly pure in that sense. So even though I am talking to you, so it happens to me as well. I mean, don't think that I am an arahant. So this conceit is a very subtle, kind of a defilement. So again and again it may arise. So actually we need to recognize it very clearly. We have to face with various challenges and then only we are able to recognize it. And once it is recognized, we should be able to keep it aside rather than driven by it. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. For the next question, I'd like to invite Mahisha.
Oh. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I thought I clicked the mute thing again. Okay. Bhante, I actually share my practice experience and then ask for advice also to that.
Yeah.
So now when I start sitting session, I quickly actually can get over the, I can pass the anapanasati quickly. So that means my breath getting calm so quickly, and then I watch on that, and then when it's like settled, I then start on dhatu manasikara sensations, and I keep doing that for a while, and then I feel like I'm getting into my usual samadhi state, and then you know I with the advice that I have received from you all, I you know, let the couple of thoughts comes in and, you know, visit me and then kind of, you know, have a visit and then passing away. So I keep watching that. But after some time, then I get with the trap on it. So I start, you know, making stories out of it and running through it. And I run for a while and then I can come and then I realize, oh, okay, I'm running too much now. So I get back to my sensations again and watch the breath and then getting back again. So like that, I'm going on a journey like that, round and round. And Now it has become like my way of life when I'm not working or when I'm not doing anything else. When I'm kind of relaxing, the way how I stay. So it's my sitting session also like kind of like that now towards like end, towards the middle or end part. And then, so it keeps on like that. And then I suddenly actually, the past few weeks, I'm getting a real severe pain on my, one of my leg actually always troubling me. And then I watch the pain. I can watch the pain clearly, it's appearing and then fading away. And then it goes off completely and stays for some time. And then again, slowly the pain creeps through and then disappearing like that. I watch that and then my time getting up. So this is the process that now I'm going through for about more than a week now. I feel like a little boring and I'm thinking... I don't know, I'm not expecting anything because I know Swaminas are always saying, I mean, people are having the problem of expecting things. I'm not expecting anything, but after finishing, it's quite okay. But I feel like, like it's always like that.
Yeah.
And even with the day-to-day activities, when I'm doing my mind, not getting that, you know, crazy thoughts like, I mean, those days now. So it's calm, kind of calm. And even though some thoughts creeping through, I look at it and then they are disappearing. And I try to, you know, practice the Satipatthana advices that we have got through this session. So I just want to, you know, share it with you and ask whether I'm in the right path and whether I should proceed like this or do I have to do any changes?
Yeah.
Thank you,
Bhante. Yeah. So basically, I mean, once you are observing the mind, if you are able to clearly recognize various thoughts, so allow them to pass away. So once, when you allow that, again, if you say that I get caught to them, so that indicates that some sort of a weakness in the mindfulness and the clear comprehension. Because if you are weak in mindfulness and clear comprehension, there is a higher possibility that you being driven by the thoughts. Now that is where you need to return back to the Anapana Sati or Dhatu Manasikara or Vedana Anupassana, any of those, just to regain mindfulness and to establish mindfulness. And if you are able to recognize various thoughts and as a result of that, if they quickly pass us away, so just allow the mind to be. So this is a very difficult part in a way for us because we are used to do something. So that is why mind become somewhat agitated because once those thoughts pass away, we have nothing to do. So thoughts have gone, there are no much feelings and the element characteristics may be there but not necessary to watch. So they have nothing to do. So this nothing to do is a kind of a question in the mind. So what am I going to do? Am I going to observe feelings? Am I going to observe thoughts? But at the moment there are no thoughts. So what am I going to do? So these kind of questions agitates the mind. Now again mind become agitated. Again various thoughts are coming. Now ultimately you probably might get caught to them. But the point here is once the thoughts pass away, learn how just be. Not to do anything. So whatever you do on such situation are formations, are mental formations, are sankhara. So those sankharas are developed because of the ignorance, avijja. So if we are able to completely let go of all the thoughts and now you are not grasping any feelings, now you are not grasping any sort of element characteristics, thoughts are also gone, the mind is very clear. Just enjoy that. Just be. And what happened to us is this kind of a freedom, this kind of a peacefulness, we recognize as kind of a boredom. Because our mind is used to agitation. By seeing various things, we agitate the mind. Say you are watching the movies, you are watching various news, all the collapses, all the calamities, Every sorrow, lamentation, you are watching and you agitate the mind. And all the various songs, news and everything you are hearing and you agitate the mind. And you may go through various incense, etc. You agitate the mind. And you may use the tongue to agitate the mind. And you are going through various sensations, the bodily sensations, that also agitate the mind. And none of them are present, you start to think and keep the mind agitated. So we are used to agitation. So we are in a way addicted to agitation. Now this is the area that we need to work out, how to keep the mind free from agitation. So when there are no feelings as such to observe, there are no element characteristics sort of come forward to observe, and the thoughts are also gone. So just the peace is there, kind of a very simple awareness is there. How just be in that awareness without any complaint, without any kind of mental agitation? How can I just be there? So this is the area that we need to sort of practice. So it is very difficult, like today, because we are sort of suffering of doing syndrome. We always want to do something. Sometimes people call it as doing syndrome. So how to overcome this doing syndrome? So if we are able to overcome this doing syndrome, then we can simply be. We can simply enjoy this simple awareness. That is more peaceful and that is more free from grasping and completely free from tension, and we can say more closer to the Nibbana.
Bhante, I understand that, but as you said, now I stayed there for a couple of, you know, weeks now.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, feel like nothing wrong about it. You
yeah.
know, now, I mean, initially it was, I was kind of, you know, actually happy that, okay.
For how long that you, how long that, now suppose, once you come to that stage in a particular session, suppose in a sitting session, how long can you maintain it?
I can maintain it for like, let's say, for a quite long time, I can maintain it. But
say half an hour? Half an hour?
Let's say, not that much, like 15 minutes?
No, no, no. You
like
have to
15, 20 minutes?
No, no, no. You have to increase it.
Yeah, I try to, but Bhante, I feel like
bored.
As you said, the correct word is, I feel like really boring. And
exactly,
then
exactly.
I will get into my mind, or that's okay. Bhante said that let the thoughts creep through. So I just release it, you know. Okay, let the thoughts come, and then of course the thoughts come one after the other.
Yeah.
And then I watch them; they go. But sometimes I get caught with them. Once in a way, I get caught.
Yeah.
I run with them for a like few minutes, and then I realize, oh my God, oh, this is it, and I think I get caught now. I should get back to my breath or sensations, and I can quickly get back.
So that's what I am giving you, the challenge. So I am giving you a kind of a challenge. So once thoughts are gone, are you able to maintain that thoughtless mind, say half an hour? So keep it like a challenge.
I'll try. I think I will be able to, because I tried it once.
Yeah.
But again, I release when I'm feeling bored. I release it.
No, that's the point.
And again, I.
That's the point.
Come
so,
back and go. Come back and go, and then my time goes up.
Yeah.
And then I stand.
No, anyway, I mean, this can be improved. I mean, don't worry. So again and again, once you are practicing like this, so slowly this period can be prolonged. It can be now,
okay.
Suppose you are able to maintain it for 15 minutes. Now, after a while, you can make it for, say, 20 minutes. After a while, you can make it for 25 minutes. So likewise, allow the mind to calm down. Allow the mind to be at home. So don't allow the mind to get agitated. Instead, allow the mind to get registered in this area. Because now the mind is not used to this. Because mind was constantly in a running kind of a situation. Always agitated, never at home. Now, so once it has come back home, so it feels boring. There's nothing to do. Simply rest. Or to sleep.
Actually, the boring thing I started feeling like 3-4 days ago. Until that, I was quite enjoying that, you know, that moment. I think when the time period gets more and more, I feel I started getting like, oh, it's bored.
Yeah. Anira.
But when the time period was short, I was enjoying it. That's what I think. I feel.
So enjoy boredom now.
Yes. Okay.
Now give a kind of a new interpretation to the boredom. So this boredom is for me to enjoy. So how to enjoy boredom? Because unless we volitionally do this, unless we train the mind to do this, we don't take this initiative. Because always we are used to agitate the mind, always we want to do something. So we have to deliberately keep the mind without doing anything, without making any sankhara, without making any formations, and just allowing the mind to rest. Suppose the mind was long time, always going on and on for a long period of time. Now it has come back home. Now only it has taken a good rest, and allow it to rest. So
okay.
This has to be trained in the mind. So then only you will then slowly, when you are training like that, slowly the mind itself will understand it. So only at the beginning we have to purposely do that, but later mind has the capacity to learn. So once the mind understood it, then your driving, your motivation is not necessary. So mind will enjoy it. But at the moment, you need to do some sort of a guidance. You need to do some sort of a guidance, kind of a training that may be a little deliberate, and that has to do at the beginning. But later, once the mind itself has understood, so then it's a quite a smooth process.
Yeah, so you'll be able to put that into that state whenever I think, even during the daytime or whenever I have some free time.
Exactly.
I will be able to put that, like putting the autopilot thing on.
Yeah.
I got it this.
Yeah.
So, I'll practice to do in daytime as well, because I really enjoy it when I'm doing in the middle of, you know, when I'm getting a break.
Yeah.
During work time or during anything, when I'm getting a break, I feel like I like to put into that state.
Good.
I tried that.
So consider it as the state which is free from any proliferation, free from any useless thinking, ruminating.
Uh-huh.
So now the mind has its peace. So how to keep the mind at peace, at its baseline, at its original state as much as possible? So then actually it is not some sort of a waste of time. Rather, this is the place that mind get energized. It is get rejuvenated when the mind is quiet and peaceful.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
It helps a lot.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. I'd like to invite you to Debbie to please ask the next question.
Hi, thank you. And just from the ladies' thing, Bhante, is that after you have meditated for a while, is that boredom, can you interpret it as the disenchantment? Like, well, that's not what it is.
That's here actually. Disenchantment typically we come across when, say, when we are seeing various things arising and passing away. So we get disenchanted to those phenomena. Suppose you are used to various objects, say sights, sounds, smells, say taste, tactile sensations, thoughts, etc. So we used to enjoy them as much as possible. So that is what we define as our kind of wealth or our rich. But when we see the arising and passing away nature, as we are practicing what we have discussed today, more and more we become disenchanted to those. So then they are there, but now they appear like little distant. They everything like mixed up. Everything appear like a kind of a flux. Now that is where the disenchanted is in operation.
Okay, because in my case, when I meditate, one thing I do all what you have discussed, but also I come to a very, very comfortable, you know, and I can sit there for quite a while, just in that comfort sort of area. So I don't know whether I haven't, though I have seen the rising and passing, you know, I don't get a disenchantment, Bhante. That's why I asked the question.
No, thing is, now if you are able to see arising and passing away, and as a result, if your mind completely let go of all those processes and simply like to stay quiet, like to stay at peace,
yes.
So that state has to be developed. So that is the state that we are discussing with the other lady, and that is the same thing that I have to tell you. So, I mean, the recognizing all these characteristics of the phenomena is one phase. So once we recognize that, they also start to fade away and disenchantment is there. So ultimately kind of a letting go happens. So the mind is at peace without going to attach to any of those things.
Yes.
Yeah.
But when the mind is at peace, that is also a very nice feeling, Bhante.
Yes, yes. Why not?
Yes. Yeah, so that's what I want to clarify. Yeah.
Because
yes.
There is no friction. Yeah, there is no
yes.
friction, there is no tension, there is no grasping,
yes.
there is no heaviness.
Yes.
So you can actually enjoy it.
Yes, and I do enjoy it. As I told you some time ago, that of course because we are lay people, we can't sit there forever. We have to get up and get on with things. But that is a good level, a good state, Bhante.
Definitely, definitely.
Yes.
So very.
So that's all right.
Very, very rich, very fruitful state, and we need to develop that. And you need to understand, so there can't be any defilements there. There can't be any grasping. There can't be
yes.
any tension. There can't be
no.
any sort of a entanglement. So these are the certain very, say, positive qualities that we can experience while being there. So more and more we are used to that. So then we are able to notice defilements very quickly. So this state is developed not just to stay there, rather, so this is a kind of a mechanism, kind of a reference point for us to recognize various subtle defilements. Because, say, gross defilements, of course, we can easily recognize. But the subtle defilements are able to recognize more and more. We are able to dwell in this kind of a state. Because this area is a very pure kind of a state.
But that you can only... So you say those subtle things, are we supposed to see that in the daily life? Because when you are in that state, there are no defilements, Bhante.
Yeah, that's the thing. So when our mind is used to stay in that sort of a very undefiled, very pure, calm, peaceful state, so mind
yes.
starts to appreciate that. And
yes.
And mind will understand how tension-free is this state, how beautiful, how, say, pure, and how lighter this state. Now suppose now you are in a day-to-day activity as a result of some situation, now again mind unknowingly become grasped something, again got hooked up with something. Now you feel the tension, now you feel the grasping, now you feel the kind of heaviness. That heaviness is very strong when compared to the previous stages. Now, so as a result of that, now mind suffering. Now you have to
yes.
let go. Now you have to let go of that grasping, that desire. Because mind requests that from you. Why are you suffering? I am tired of this. I am now going through some tension. Don't torture me. So likewise, kind of an inner request may be coming.
Yes, because actually more and more you want to let go and not get that feeling... Like you don't want to get involved in certain things that you normally have been doing and going to work and coming back and doing all these things. Now more and more you want to let go of those
No, actually that is where we need to have a kind of a balance. So we need to understand what is really necessary to do and what are the things that we unnecessarily entangled onto. So we sometimes... ask and take in the trouble. And there may be certain troubles, certain activities they actually have come to us. So that we can't avoid, we have to go through them, we take them as a kind of a challenge, and we have to go through our life, and we have to face these challenges, and there are various duties, responsibilities, so we are going through
it. Yes, of course.
Yeah, so that is all right. But on the other hand, there may be areas that we unnecessarily put our hand in. So those can be avoided now.
Avoided.
Yeah.
Right, thank you, Bhakti. And you spoke about the Kacchadagota Sutta. Which Nikaya is that from, Bhakti?
Yeah, this is in Samyutta Nikaya, Nidana Vagga. Nidana Vagga, Samyutta Nikaya, Collected Discourses of the Buddha. Yeah.
The other thing I want to ask you was, you said, you know, that the four things that we cling to in this world is that what is impermanent we take as permanent, and what is unsatisfactory as satisfactory, non-self as self, and loathsome as beautiful.
Yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that, because I think some time ago I asked you this question. There are some very beautiful things in this world, Bhante. I mean, that is a fact, isn't it?
Yeah. So that is...
Everything is not loathsome. That is my question.
Now, that is the point. So when we are able to maintain kind of a non-grasping attitude, so we can keep the beauty as beauty. So we can actually, we can allow the beauty to be there without grasping it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is
without the upadana, you can appreciate, because nature
is
nature.
Yes.
There is a lot of beauty in nature.
Yes, yes.
So you can appreciate it and let go.
Exactly. So that is where... there's a very beautiful verse coming in the Nibbedika Sutta. There Buddha mentioned, so it is not the beautiful things the problem. It is the clinging that's the problem. So beautiful things may still be there. I mean, let them be there. So therefore, the wise person may restrain the clinging in the mind. So... that verse comes like tithanti chitrani tateva loke atenta dhira vinayanti chanda. So therefore the wise person, the practitioner, he simply allow the beauty to be there. I mean, he doesn't go and destroy them, telling that they are the ones polluting my mind. Rather, he keeps the beauty as it is, but he is restraining his mind. He is taming his mind. He is removing that clinging. So then you can actually be in the world without any issue.
Yes, ma'am.
So there
are
there are very beautiful verses. I think I already mentioned in another day, like Venerable Mahakassapa, how he has lived in that far forest, and he has seen that the fireflies are flying in the sky during the night time, and he mentioned in the Theragatha, so he actually has seen the beauty there.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is a fact. But whether you cling or not is another business.
Exactly. So the beauty may be there, so you don't need to destroy it, and you can actually appreciate it, as you said, and the clinging is the problem.
Yes. And my last clarification is, you spoke about callousness and non-self. Now that is we experience only in meditation, Bhante. We can't just in the normal life. I mean, hardness is hard, and we are sitting on a chair, we can feel the hardness, but that doesn't arise and that doesn't pass away until you get up and go.
Yeah. No, thing is,
would
so
that be right?
No, thing is, even there, now the point is that it is the same situation, but while in the meditation session, our mind is well established and very precise, and it has the capacity to penetrate that experience. So there you may not have experienced kind of a lasting or permanent kind of a hardness, but you understand it's a very quick arising and passing away kind of a hardness. But such precision is not available in your mind in the day-to-day activities. As a result of that, you may experience this hardness is existing for a while. It is not the reality. I mean, the hardness is always arising and passing away because of our say inability, so we perceive it like it is lasting for some time.
So is that a form of ignorance, or is it just in a way that we
can't maintain very refined concentration and mindfulness, etc., to every time to penetrate to that level. So while in the meditation, suppose we are developing such quality and we are arousing those insights, so once those insights are available, so you are now taking the mind to another level, that you are not grasping things. So now you develop that non-grasping state of the mind. Anisthitocha viharati na chakinchi loke upadhyati. So before you reach that, you come across that samudaya dhamma anupassi, vaya dhamma anupassi. So that's the previous stage. So you go through that first and you understand the transient nature of various phenomena. And after you understand that and you build up enough courage, enough wisdom through that observation, now you start to dwell in the non-grasping state of mind. So even in the meditation, now you don't need to go and look at these element characteristics because you already have seen it. So in the day-to-day activities, now we can try to maintain a mind which is free from grasping. That is the second stage actually.
So it's a matter of continuing to be vigilant and mindful, no, Bhante, even in the day-to-day activities.
Sure.
Sometimes we can just forget about it and lose the mindfulness.
Yeah, that can happen.
Okay, Bhante, that's fine. Thank you so much for that explanation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, looks like we have one more raised hand, and I also have a written question. Should we keep going, Bhante?
Yeah, probably. Okay, we'll take the raised hand then.
Okay. All right, then we'll save the written question for next time.
Yeah, okay.
I'd like to invite my Darshika to please ask the question.
Hello, Bhante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I would like to hear Samadhan and get some advice from you for the position in my meditation. This happened last week when I was doing the walking meditation. If I remember right, you said the incident happened between if I remember right, it has not happened during the walking meditation, even though has happened many times during the previous meditation. In the past, since I was not alarmed and I knew what was happening due to the previous experience, although it gave me a shock, I started the walking meditation as usual per instructions given by you, Bhante, to do it very leisurely and effectively, allowing to go to the institute naturally, and in the hope that the new thoughts will come naturally so that I could watch them carefully. I am very mindful and keep watching easily as to what happened, and then when they are open and letting go. So, as far, this is not the incident that I said, first when I started the meditation, I go to, I do very literally now, and go into the institute as a problem. Having been watching the thought arising somewhere there, since thought would come and go. And after a while, another thought comes and puts the object and thrown away. But what has been happening is the thought, and I immediately sleep one thought. But this was unusual because it was after a period that I saw this element. So I will explain that unusual event now. So after starting the walking meditation, it was also a cold day too. I felt the outside coldness creeping into my lips and fingers. It felt as a slight cold feeling sensation spreading from the fingers to the whole hand. Then it was slowly moving up to the left shoulder as if on a gloomy autumn day, there was a cool day sweeping across. This felt like you could feel the tiniest raindrop like the mist heading through. Then this feeling was getting stronger and it started to spread across the body to the other side, involving the upper right upper limb too. Now it seemed as if it was fairly strong cool breeze was passing through continuously while the margins of the body was lost and had dispersed into the natural thin air. So that is the body has merged with the empty space. Now only the head and the feet touching the ground was really thin. Hardly a frightening thought was noted too because the body was not thin. It was like it was going to start to rain, small fine raindrops falling down. Then it suddenly felt as if a very heavy rain was coming down and a few large drops of rain were filled past its top abruptly. Then it felt as if it was covered again with the fine mist like thinner away, and after a little while, slowly faded away. I continued with the walking meditation and in a few minutes the alarm went. Then I sat down and calmly analyzed what had happened. I could very well remember when something similar happened 2 years ago for the first time when all the body margins were lost while doing the seated meditation and it went beyond 1 hour. I got so frightened at that time. I was amazed too. I quickly sent the SMS to Mr. Amaranath asking whether I could speak to him. So Bhante, this is first the first time this occurred while I was walking. So from this what I understood was that there is the person form is like a solid form was broken into small particles so that there was no person and just taking from one to another so as to get impermanent and because of that there was
no can you actually forward, I think you have already written the question, you can forward this to to Jennifer. Because your mic seems to be not that clear. Actually, I tried to understand your question as much as possible because your mic has some kind of echoing and I don't know whether I understood the question properly. So as far as I understood, so you are able to experience some fading away of the various phenomena. It may be thoughts, it may be various characteristics, it may be feelings. And once they are faded away, so you are able to experience some sort of a peacefulness. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes. And this was normally, previously I was getting a lot of, different forms of elements. But this was, now I was experiencing thoughts, maybe, but this was the first time I had such an experience when I was doing the walking meditation. So it is the same thing, but I wanted to share and ask
So what? What is actually? What is the experience? What is the new experience that you have?
The new experience is that I saw the element breaking down, the solid form we normally take as a person, just breaking down into like a fine started from the hand, and then it gradually moved
back to
fullness.
Okay, okay. Right. So you got to continue this. You got to continue because especially when we do elements meditation, so this can happen because you are at the beginning we perceive the body as a solid thing, as a compact something. But as we continue our meditation, it starts to divide into various pieces. It starts to disintegrate. So this is quite all right. You don't need to be afraid, and this experience will be available for you, and in the future you can't have kind of a boundary to the body in the sense that suppose once you sit at the beginning of our say couple of years ago, we can feel that there's a kind of a boundary, this is the shape of the body, but as we continue our practice we lose that shape, we lose that boundary, so everything has sort of disintegrated, everything has fallen into pieces. And now we can't have a solid body. Now the compactness view has gone. So this is a kind of an insight that we gain in our practice. You can continue your practice. You don't need to be afraid of this.
So that is where the self is broken down. That's the self.
Yeah. So this is one way of understanding non-self. That the body has disintegrated, body has fallen into various pieces, broken into pieces, and there we can't understand, we can't say that the body has a person, that it has a kind of a solid thing. There is no core there. So this is one insight area that we can recognize, but there are various other areas available to you as we are developing, say, Vedana Anupassana, Chitta Anupassana, Dhamma Anupassana. So this is insight that we are coming across when we do Kaya Anupassana actually.
So, Pandi, even the thoughts are how to dance with the sun,
Exactly. You just need to continue. So once the body has completely like that disappeared, so now you start to be aware of various thoughts and allow them to come and go. And once they are gone, just be in that empty space. Yes. Yeah, exactly. As we discussed earlier, you need to allow the mind to rest in that area. You have to allow the mind to rest in that peace. Yes. Okay, actually we have taken almost 1 hour and 40 minutes. Now I think the time is there for the complete our session. So today also we have spent some time in discussing this sutta and discussing various questions. So with this we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share the merits with all the beings. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata cha amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattaja bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattaja bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattaja bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.